up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 17. McKinney 19. Dow futures up 186. Nasdaq futures up 30. We just keep rolling along here as Jerome Powell now is expected to make a major commitment to raising inflation anytime soon. Commit to do this, Mr. Powell. Get the bleep out of the limousine, and you'll see all the inflation you want. Just saying. How's that for early morning rant, Manny? Kevin?
I think you're right.
What is with these people? The only people...
All it takes is a stroll through the aisles at the grocery store.
Or the stock market? Or...
That could do, too.
Or used cars, or new cars, or, you know, pick a number, for God's sake. Pick whatever it is. I don't know. Whatever it is, Kevin, I don't... You know, it's an interesting part as we're debating how much to give. And I, you know, first of all, everybody knows that I don't want anybody unemployed. This whole mess to me is something like out of a Twilight Zone episode. But I don't see how the hell we're talking about. Did Carl sent the thing out the other day that 7.1% of the income now is being given to people by the federal government. The previous record was what, 1.55 in 1975 or something. I don't know if you read that piece.
Yeah, I did.
It's, I mean,
and Carl's email headline was even better, but oh, yeah. Say that on a family show.
But I don't get the part where the people who are the only people that are not getting the raise are the people who are working that are allegedly going to pay for all this stuff, right? So we're talking about. We're punching money into the economy, so inflation's going up. All right, so we got that going. We've got people getting paid that aren't working. Now, granted, so many people are out of work. You got to do something. I get that. But then we've got the only people that aren't going up. Some of those people have gotten to the extent of 100% raise, Kevin. Now, granted, they're making too little and all that stuff. I mean, everybody knows I'm on the side of the worker. The only person who is not getting a raise is the person who's still working and whose stock is not going up. And those are the guys at the end of the day are supposed to be paying all this other stuff off. Tell me how this works. I mean, it's so counterintuitive to me. I mean, if you designed a car like that, it wouldn't run. Just saying.
Well, hey, it's, Let me put it this way. I'm struggling to find the words, but just in the simplest, do you think that in 2020 we're doing everything wrong?
What did your buddy Mark Grace said last night? We need a mulligan on this year.
We need a mulligan on this year. Yeah, we could use a mulligan on this year. Or I'll go with the giant meteor, either one, whichever it takes.
Yeah.
But, it's just like you'd think that just using the dartboard for making major decisions, we'd be 50-50. Or rolling dice or whatever it is, you'd expect. No, we're like all wrong. It's all wrong.
I don't know what. I think some of it is. I don't know that it's. What's the word? I don't know if it's not. Nothing's deserved. Let's put it this way. In a society, everything is deserved and yet not deserved. I mean, people together can be very stupid, but individual people are rarely stupid, right? So it's, I mean, it's this constant human conundrum that people have been writing about since people could write. I mean, it never really changes. We have this kind of, you know, disrespect for leadership. You know, anybody can be a leader. Let's put, you know, Humpty Dumpty up there because he's popular or she's popular or something. And we totally disdain the respect for, I mean, do you want the person who's in that job to ever read a book without pictures? I mean, should they have some kind of knowledge of economics, of the law? Should they have some kind of, I mean, I'm not just talking about the current, I mean, this has been going, we've managed to downgrade the people there over a long period of time. I really do believe that. On every level, not just, I mean, the presidency, maybe, you know, not as much, but on every level. I mean, you know, we had Jesse Ventura as a mayor, and he ended up doing a halfway decent job. Who was the governor of California for a while? See the other wrestler?
Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, Arnold. I mean, we're talking about guys that you would not have expected their history to put them in that job. I mean, it's not exactly, I mean, you would never appoint somebody a general who was a bodybuilder and that's it. Right, when he's at people, and yet all of a sudden somebody in that spot gets the crisis that they're not prepared for, and those people probably hired people under them that they're not the brightest because they don't want to hire people smarter than them. So it just cavalcades. So all of a sudden, seeming like everybody who runs FEMA appears to be a buffoon, which they aren't probably personally a buffoon, but they don't have they can't turn an agency of that size around in the 2 years they're there. Which would be, you know, I don't know if Solomon could pull that off. So you've got this constant year after year, because you've been writing back and forth about, you know, government being inefficient. Yet, Kevin, I don't know that you look at some levels of government, and, I mean, like Frank was telling me the other day, you go into the Palos post office, and the two ladies that run the place are extremely proud of their place, and that everybody in Palos gets their mail on time. They don't lose anything. They don't screw anything up. They can't believe what the agency is doing to them and what's happening when they send stuff other places. The bus drivers, you get in a bus in Chicago, and I'm going to say every one of them is polite as hell. They don't, somehow or other, negotiate this traffic, and I don't know if there's even an accident a day with all of them out there. And, you know, I mean, there are incredibly conscientious people that run, that work for all these places that just have the job to do, and they just go do it like anybody else. And yet, somewhere along the line, you know, you get this massive administrative hunk over the top of them, and all of a sudden the thing becomes, you know, a goat bleep. And you wonder, how the hell did it get there? When all the people I see look to me like they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I don't know where the cutoff is, Kevin. Is it in Washington?
I'm not sure where the cutoff is, Tom, except that when you get into bloated bureaucracy, then, you know, and entitlement and you know, all of those descriptors. I remember when Mitt Romney was running, so I thought, okay, I need to learn more about him because I wasn't really excited about him, and I read his book Turnaround, which is was about the Olympics, the Salt Lake City Olympics, and if you recall, Romney had to take it over because they were in danger of having them moved away, and what did he have to deal with? An entitled, bloated bureaucracy, way over budget, spending out of control, people not doing, you know, people at the highest levels not doing their jobs, some corruption. Sounds a lot like our federal government, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And they had to turn it around, and they did. And his descriptions of how they went about doing it, and this is a book he wrote before he even ran for governor of Massachusetts, so or Senate in Massachusetts, whatever it was that he ran for, I guess governor of Massachusetts, and so you know I don't know that it was written with an attempt to you know to puff himself up because you know his direction was going to be Bain Capital at that point, but he told the story. And you know, if you were asking me what skill do you really want as a president, I want someone who can assemble a good team and lead it. And that's really how they pulled off the Olympics. That's, you know, that's a skill that you see in really good businesses and high performing businesses, and it really is a skill that I would like to see at the top of the federal government, because that's how, you know, that's how you begin to affect some change in there. And if you're going to make appointments that are going to be longer term appointments in different different parts of the in different agencies, then you need appointments that would do the same thing, where they can put together, they can assemble a team, and they can lead it, and they can let them accomplish things.
Well, I also think that, Kevin, in deference to our people, Bush, and to a certain extent Trump, Obama, maybe to a certain extent there too. I mean, Bush, who knows what he wanted to do when he got into office. I mean, he really didn't, he had no, you know, no stones at all to tackle the healthcare thing that Clinton never got to, because people kept putting Hillary's name on it. Now, I think her plan was probably better than the plan we ended up with, but, you know, it's ancient history. But the, so Clinton had a, you know, the 2000 thing, and because of vagaries in the tax law where people had to pay taxes if you made money on stocks, but you didn't get any money back if you lost money on stocks, or not as much. He ended up with, you know, a budget surplus, sort of. Although Carl talks about, if you really look at all the numbers, it never really was a surplus, but they were essentially paying back debt and so forth, so I mean, it acted like a budget surplus, at least in the time. I mean, it was a cash budget surplus. I mean, in terms of how much they actually owed, I don't think it ever was a budget surplus, but it got as close as we've ever been, and certainly in my lifetime. And so then, you know, Bush gets in, and he's not there, you know, time to take a dump, and all of a sudden 9/11 happens. So whatever he had sort of planned, and whatever people he had appointed to do other things, or whatever his goals were, I never exactly knew what they were, other than be kind of a caretaker guy, but I always liked him. I always thought he was honest. I always thought he had some honor. So now his whole presidency and all the mistakes he made were really, you know, invading Iraq. I think the Homeland Security Act is pretty much should have been blown up. But today, I would never have voted for it. Of course, I would probably vote out of office because I didn't. But his presidency gets defined by that. And all of a sudden, we have the mortgage crisis and all this stuff, which his people in the Fed, who were in those jobs, to watch out for something just like that. I mean, just, like I keep using the movie Major League. This is the, you know, this is the out you've been waiting your whole life for. I mean, they didn't, somehow or another, our guys, pontificators that they are, couldn't possibly understand that there's a bazillion people borrowing money in Japan at 2% and buying mortgages at 6.5%. With margin basically out the behind, and every single mortgage dollar, there was 35 hours of leverage stacked on top of it. And talk about the big lie. If you talk to 90% of the people in this country, they're going to say that the reason for the mortgage crisis was giving mortgages to people who didn't deserve them, and it was all Bill Clinton's fault. Okay, that accounts for the $1. What about the other 35? But nobody else understands the other 35, so it remains. You know, they gave the mortgage to Jose, and he shouldn't have got one, right? In the white people's vernacular. So now that thing blows up. So Obama's, really his entire first term is determined by this economic disaster. And the fix that the Fed puts in there, which now we're still kind of, paying for. And then he jams through this healthcare, which he figures is one thing he can do because he's got both houses of Congress, is jammed through a healthcare bill with no help from the other side. And if one thing the guy should have known, he knew government, he should have known that no bill that is strictly one side of the aisle ever is any good. If you don't get the other side to buy into it at least 40-50%, the thing is a disaster waiting to happen at the launch window, right? And so he does that and screws up the healthcare system. Now this guy comes in, kind of farts around for 2 years, and all of a sudden now he's got this thing. And no matter what he may have attempted to streamline government and everything, and now he's running a printing press, sending people money. So these guys get knocked off the goal awful quickly, Kevin. So I mean, so how in this whole mess, even though I'm not a Trump fan, how is Trump supposed to revise the Veterans Department or revise something? I mean, when every single day there's a disaster on his plate. I mean, it's hard. I mean, it's not an easy deal.
Well, and that's, you know, we've described that before. I know I've talked about it before, because what happens is you get the disaster, and now you have to mobilize something. You know, some agency, some department, whatever it is. But you get the disaster, and you say, okay, let's do it. And now that's when you find out how bleeped up it is.
Yeah.
And so the first thing you're going to do is, as you mobilize, you're gonna fall all over, you know, collectively you're gonna fall all over yourself. And so just to get it to functional, is basically, you're out cracking whips and all that. You know, I mean, you just have to, you know, it's what do I have to do to get something done today? So before you can even think about saying, what am I going to do for the long term to make this thing functional and make this department, this division, this, you know, it's a company, is there like that, you know, any organization, is you just have to get through today. And what am I going to do to just, you know, push out the work that I have to do today? And so you look horrible. I mean, everything, and it is horrible. And from there, then, you know, do you ever even have time? Does anybody ever get the time in office to step back and say, okay, let's fix this, and fix it for, you know, fix it for the long term? And that's, you know, that's part of it. With all the turnover that we can have at high levels of government, the fact is you don't do that. And so you are relying on those people at the Palos Heights Post Office to do their job well, and they will, but any coordinating effort that goes higher than that starts to get to be, it becomes a problem. And a lot of this stuff, Tom, is institutionalized. We've talked about some of the, you know, some of the laws that got in the way of our coronavirus response, you know, because, you know, the Congress's motto should be, hey, we didn't think it through.
Yeah.
So we become at cross purposes with what we're trying to accomplish, but we don't realize that until the disaster hits.
Well, and then you have people that drop down into, you know, I have to beat up on our buddy Bush, but, you know, all of a sudden now his buddies that he dragged in there with him that are not idiots, you know, the Rumsfelds and those guys, they looked at yet another opportunity to go get the oil in Iraq. I mean, they were fixated on that like forever, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You have the thieves in there, too. It is a den of thieves. You know, but I'll say it shows up in everything. Let's just backtrack a little bit, because he's out of office, and so we don't have to worry about, you know, what are we, armchair quarterback in the current thing. But think back to the response to the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, and how long that dragged on doing nothing for a long time, because we didn't know what to do and we didn't have the right people. And then as you looked at it and you looked at the oversight, you know, with hindsight, you know, how poor that was, and how this, you know, how predictable that some kind of an accident was, you know, was just waiting to happen. Or you could look at, you know, the response to Katrina. You can go back to any of these disasters and find that it's just, you know, the first thing you do is just start stumbling. And, you know, if we are ever fortunate enough to get it on track, then you probably should consider it a miracle. And you know, so I don't think we've gotten anything on track. What have we really? If we look at everything related to coronavirus, there's some stuff that's fallen into place. But what we've learned about it statistically, and anybody who keeps track of what Carl does on it, or a lot of other interesting people, then as you start looking at it statistically, it's more or less taken care of itself more than we're doing anything.
Well, that's typical. I have a piece of paper here, Kevin, that said that in most economic circumstances, when you have your basic business cycle recession, which, I mean, a lot of economists think are somewhat healthy, where people get on their skis a little bit, and then there's a little pullback, and you go back. But it's not 2007 balance sheet recession. It's not 1932, and it's not like now. But the Congress basically huffs and puffs and puts through some little bill, and the thing fixes itself anyway, and then they take credit for it. So that's really, so pushing the stone down the road is really a viable political strategy like 90% of the time. Because don't do anything, it will fix itself, basically. But we're talking, by the way, talking about, you know, stupidity, we got a letter from, we have many people who listen in Australia, amazingly. We got a letter from our friend Jeremy, I won't give the last name, and he says that they now have everything's being locked down again over there, and his parents just went in a assisted living, and now he can't go see them, right? There's a couple of girls from Brisbane visited Melbourne to go on a shopping spree.
Sounds like the opening line to a joke.
Yeah, well, evidently they claim they traced them and found they spread the virus everywhere. Because they went shopping at all these restaurants. I don't know how these girls are all of a sudden this spreadable, who knows. But anyway, so now there's this huge lockdown, and now they're thinking about criminal charges against the girls. So the guy says, Jeremy, but how about the thousands of people that Qantas let in back in February, or the cruise line owners letting thousands loose in the middle of the night, not even checking passports, wheeling them off the ships at night to hospital beds to travel back home with no tracing? So how then now we're going to put three girls in jail? They must not have the right daddies. This is the point where we should be finding somebody that pulls out of the pack and says, I'm the new leader. I don't care what color you are. I don't care what gender you are. And we're going worse. We're going backwards, I think. I mean, the idea that somehow or other, out of the Schumer, Pelosi, McConnell, Trump quartet, that we're going to find somebody in there that all of a sudden is believable, I don't see it happening, Kevin. I mean, these are the four people that have all the power in this country. And what are we doing? I just, on an individual level, there isn't an impressive.
I don't know, but it's scaring me. Scaring me when you talk about it.
Yeah, man.
Hey, how about them Cubs?
Are they going to play St. Louis this weekend, Manny, you think?
St. Louis flew back to St. Louis from Milwaukee, I think, yesterday. So that was a big step. But if they were, it would be Friday. Still up in the air.
Well, how many guys? Marlins played last night, right?
Yep, after 9 days off, the Marlins returned to action last night.
Did you see the, I'm not going to, even Josh would not be able to describe the roster moves they made. Did you see that list last night during the Cub game?
I did.
No, talk about it.
I know it was four pages, but there were things and there were stuff there I didn't even understand.
They just showed, without getting into the weeds, the number of transactions the Marlins made over the last like 48 hours, and it was four pages of names, call ups, injured lists, signings, DFA'd, all this stuff, and it was pretty remarkable.
Now I thought, help me here. The idea was they have a 60-man roster where like 30 people were some other place, like in South Bend or somewhere. So a dummy like me would just say, okay, we got 12 guys off. Why not just take 12 guys from South Bend and away we go? But they must have 40 people or 30 people coming and going on that page.
Well, some of that probably was that 60-person roster, because the active roster is 30. So you actually have to do a transaction to get one of your reserves onto your roster.
We might
that number, by the way, is going to fall pretty soon from 30 to 28. So, you have these people that they're on your payroll and they're working out every day. In the Cubs' case, they're working out here over here in South Bend. But you actually do have to make a move when somebody's.
But they had. They must have had five or six absolute just stone cold signings, and they made it like off from some other place.
Yeah.
They had
waiver wire signings, or scrap heap signings.
Just because you have a 60-man roster doesn't mean any of them are good. It's a lot already for the big leagues. So they signed a ton of people that other teams had waived for whatever reason that were big league type players, but weren't, and so that's why they had so many transactions. You would be terrible if you just called up 12 AA players. Well, so you're going to sign. Yeah. There's tons of free agents out there, and guys that, you know, didn't make the team out of spring training, or guys that just got cut, or guys that were hurt and now they're healthy. And those are the type of guys that go out and signing.
Well, Mattingly said what
a fair number of the people on the 60 are some of their best prospects that they want to make sure are working out every day under team supervision.
Right, and that they don't want to start service time for.
That's my next question. If you bring, even in, we're not getting any kind of a dispensation, is a Catholic term, from the commissioner, if you start somebody, give him one game because you have to.
I don't think so.
Okay, so all that's still in there. It's probably the union contract. But what did Mattingly say? He was starting guys that he just met?
Mattingly said that, there's guys on the active roster now that he just met. Not that he's starting them. But.
Oh, all right, well. Plus they won, didn't they?
I didn't see.
They were leading. They were winning. SP Futures up 17. SA Futures up 35. Big news today. Disney came. Well, everybody's beating the lowered bar, right? They're jumping over the lowered bar. So it's up 782, 125.11. Everybody's making it to the upside here. It's a splash of cash. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment.
Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Merrill Weber, Mr. Kevin O'Neill on the phone. S&P futures up 19 now, NASDAQ futures up 40, Dow futures up 187. Again, the big mover this morning is Disney. We got Disney up 759. I mean, when you put out your own stuff, your own estimated stuff, and then 2 days later, 2 weeks later, you beat it, evidently everybody loves it. But the, I mean, anybody who thinks that Apple going from $1 trillion to $2 trillion and less than a year has nothing to do with the devaluation of the currency it's being counted in. Well, I guess I'm not going to be able to convince you, but anyway, that's kind of what's happening. Nikkei down 58.2%, Shanghai up 5, call that flat. Hang Seng up 155.6%. So slow to up over in Asia, over in Europe. We've got the DAX up 101.8%. FTSE up 60, that's a full 1%. Kakarot up 39.8%. Bonds 0.53, again, for an economy that's supposed to be doing good by the numbers. By the numbers, I said, not because we know people. That's 0.53 to unchanged. Japan minus 0.51. Japan hanging on. I have a thread to the upside. Positive 0.007. Talk about hanging by the fingernails. Oil up $1.33, 43.03. Rent up $1.35. Just what I said yesterday, Manny, right? Looks like we're between 38 and 42 is our range. And the minute I say that, it'll go through. Here we are, 43. Rent up 135, 45.78. Natural gas up 5 cents, 224. This thing's up 80 cents in the last 10 weeks. Wow, what a buy. Only it's such a huge contract, you can't really buy it. RBOB gas up 3 cents, 124. Gold up $34, 2,055. God, I wish I didn't sell calls in here, but silver up 98 cents. We don't have any problems in there. We're rolling out the bejesus in silver. Copper up 3 cents, 2.93. I think it might make it to $3. Anybody thinks soft dollar, you know, inflation on the way, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start on the air expressways, roadways, and tollways here on a Wednesday morning. No issues coming in on any of the area expressways. Just one slowdown, and that's on the inbound Stevenson near Cicero. No accidents or issues to report. Just a bit of a traffic slowdown there. But everything else looking good out there. Off the expressways, we do have a few issues. On the south side at 74th and Kimbark Avenue, there was an earlier structure fire that has crews on the scene. Then it looks like on the west side of the city, Lawndale Avenue between 16th and Roosevelt Road is closed due to police activity. An ongoing investigation after an officer was shot in the thigh. He's in stable condition at Mount Sinai, but an investigation is underway there that has Lawndale Avenue closed between 16th and Roosevelt. Out in the suburbs, a couple of traffic issues. At Janes Avenue at 75th Street, there is a crash. And then over in Wheaton, Prince Crossing Road at Main Street near Roosevelt Road out west, there is an accident. And then northeast of there, northern suburbs, there is an issue. Half-day road between Summit Avenue and Western is closed due to a broken water main that's affecting traffic up in the northern burbs. Weather today, it's going to be an absolutely perfect summer day today here in Chicago. Partly cloudy skies, a high of just 77, low humidity. Right now it is crystal clear and 59 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and hot with a high of 111. Right now it's clear and 90. In sports, White Sox broke a 2-2 tie in the seventh and held on to beat the Brewers 3-2. Brewers had the winning run in scoring position in the bottom of the ninth. But Colomé got out of it yet again, walking that tightrope in the ninth inning, as the White Sox have now won 6 in a row, and they're at 7-4, second place in the AL Central, after winning that game. They'll return home tonight, to play the home half of the, home and home with the Brewers, for the next two nights down at Guaranteed Rate. Cubs have won 5 in a row, and have the best record in the National League, second best record in all of baseball. They held on to beat the Royals last night at Wrigley 5-4. Cubs had a 5-2 lead, brought on struggling closer Craig Kimbrell, and he was terrible yet again. But they were able to squeak out of it and win 5-4. Cubs, again, have won 5 in a row, are 9-2, and they'll go to Kansas City for the second part of their home-and-home with the Royals playing in Kansas City the next two nights. Before they're scheduled to go to St. Louis, we will keep you posted on that for a weekend series down in St. Louis, assuming that that still happens. The Cardinals have been shut down the last few days because of coronavirus outbreaks. Second to lastly, Diamondbacks lost to the Astros 8-2. And hockey, Blackhawks are back in action tonight, 9:30 p.m. Central Time puck drop, as they'll look to go back ahead in their series. They're tied one game apiece in the best of five with Edmonton. Chief.
I had some coaching question, but here I'm reading this letter from one of our listeners, and a brother Maris man, I'll just say his name's Charles, and I'm going to read reasonable amount of this, Matty, because it's pretty.
Yeah, please do.
So on Friday, the teachers of school districts 181, Hinsdale and Clarendon Hills grade schools were picketing in the sidewalk near 55th and Holmes, in a highly visible location across the street from a jewel store. They are demanding schedule changes for their safety, meaning virus, not shooting. The Sunday Tribune front page also had their picture article. These teachers are living the life. Many were $100,000 annual pay, Cadillac health benefits, and full pensions. I've seen plenty of BS snow days over the years, too. The contribution of the cost of the school district, the local property tax bill, is absolutely outrageous. Apparently lost on them is a juxtaposition of the workers at Jewel across the street, making close to minimum wage, most with no benefits, but doing real work as cashiers, baggers, butchers, deli, stock, cleaning, and drivers. As you've been saying, these are the people who do the real, shall I say, essential work in the same community, not glorified daycare monitors for trust fund babies. I love that. Next time I see them picketing, I'll have to have a long banner and put it anyway. But also, since you go to Indiana from time to time, and Kevin can speak to this, he said there's a suburban area near Indianapolis with like Zionsville, Carmel, Fishers, Westfield. These are pretty similar in income to the western suburbs of Chicago. So the property taxes are about 1/6. But here's the part I can't really read because of Kevin. Always good to hear your show, especially like Kevin, Lou, and Carl. So,
oh man, what a warped man!
Yeah. You could have censored the Kevin part while he's on the air.
Yeah, I could have censored the Kevin. I could have stuck Frank in Kevin's spot,
and just read Kevin. You know, we like to compliment Kevin, but not when he's on the air.
Yeah, especially like Frank and Farr. You know,
save the criticism for off the air because you know it's much more fun to have some backbiting. You know, I mean that's you know much. We let's go with totally bad behavior.
But I was hoping that I wasn't the only person that was picking up the total class fighting here. And the weird part is public employees and people who have businesses, shall we say, that are real tight with government and are doing fine during this thing, they're missing the part about the other people working. I mean, these would be the first people to bitch a blue streak if the toilet paper wasn't in the jewel, right? Well, somebody's got to put it there. Well, we don't care about that guy or that lady. But is this not becoming obvious to all here, Kevin, or is it just a few of us?
Well, it isn't, but there's with public sector unions, and I don't want to condemn either the public sector unions or the people in them. However, there is often a lack of realization that when they're negotiating, when they're demanding, they're negotiating against their neighbors and they're demanding from their neighbors. That's just the way the setup is. So, you know, as you do that, as you become pretty hardcore about what you want to get as a union, it requires you to sort of check out of that realization of what's up with the neighbors, what's up with the community, because that they become your adversary. And so, and one of the things that we have really, you know, and this goes back to, you know, our opening conversation about politicians in general, we have learned to assign to adversaries that they, you know, assign bad faith to our adversaries. We've learned to assign stupidity to our adversaries, and so we have too much of a tendency to leap to those things. And part of that is that, let those suckers work. You know, they ain't me.
Well, I think when you start dealing with government money, and I'll try and approach this from the economic piece of it.
I'd really rather say when you start dealing with taxpayers' money.
Well, same thing. The government thinks it's theirs once they have it.
No, because once the government thinks it's theirs, we're kind of screwed.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, if you have, you know, say, well, Pullman was one of the originals, okay, but say you have a steel company and people strike, okay, and you're gonna say, the strike becomes an arm's length transaction. You have the steel business of what you can charge competitively, when it used to be competition, what you can charge competitively for steel, and really what you're fighting about is the share. You know that if the steel is $100 a pound, it better only be costing you $85 a pound to make it, or you're bleep out of luck, right? Now, what you're really fighting about is who gets what percentage of the $85, right? But clearly it's an arm's length transaction in the sense that the union just wants a $5 raise. And you go, all right, if I give you the $5 raise, here's the books. And the union people are not dumb. I mean, at least the people, the kind of guys I'm talking about.
I agree.
I say, if I give you a $5 raise, guess what? This $85 goes to $105, so we got to raise our prices to $120. And I think there's five other companies out there who would love to see that happen. And 2 months from now, we're not going to get an order. Right? So there's no safety valve, the discipline in the negotiation is the market. Now, if you're going to say, hey, you bleeps in management have gotten 40% raises the last 5 years, we haven't gotten squat, this time we want it instead of you. Now, that I can perfectly understand, Kevin. I mean, right? That fight's, that's an internal fight. Go have it, right? It's like, hey, Pops, you got four raises and I'm still getting $1 a week for an allowance. Either don't give me one or keep me pace here, will you? One or the other. I mean, I'm not saying a kid should talk to their dads like that, but I'm saying it's an internal fight. The fact is, the house is doing good, right? And now we're figuring out. But now, when you talk about this other stuff, it's not an arm's length transaction whatsoever, because the school district can't go out of business, or a few of these guys might go, no. The fallback position is go get more money from the other guys. Sure, we can charge $120. Yeah, but what about the other steel companies? Well, there are no other steel companies. So just go charge the $120. Okay. And you raise the taxes, and the voters never get off their dead ass enough to overcome the part that some people are just sympathetic to teachers, and some people think teachers should make $800,000 a year, or $1 million wouldn't be too much. You hear idiots like that. You know, I don't care what they make. God, they're in charge of my children. They should make $4 million a year. I mean, you get buffoons of any stretch. So the fact is, you're never going to get the voting public, unless it's totally dire, and it'll happen maybe one suburban place in the country a year, to rise up and say, this is too friggin' much. And we're gonna get off the couch and we're gonna show up. We know there's, 100 teachers and garbage men and firemen and policemen. They're gonna show up at the ballot polls, but we're gonna show up at 105 and vote them down. How often does that happen? Once in a blue moon, basically. Not even. Blue moon's a couple times a year.
And it doesn't happen, it does happen locally some, but it doesn't happen locally in big cities, because you really are dealing with a machine there. So that's off the table. A couple of things about that. One is, imagine, and this is, again, not just teachers, but anybody in public sector, imagine how you would make the case differently if you just had to go up and down the block knocking on your neighbor's doors and saying, I think we deserve a raise, and here's why. Because these are the people you see every day.
Kevin...
And that's who you're asking to pay for your raise, or asking to pay for whatever it is you're after. Pay for, the approach that you want to have to school. during 2020, such as it is now. Any of that, if you had to go knock up on your next door neighbor's door and make the case, would you make it differently than the way they're doing it on the picket lines?
Kevin, I have a feeling that they're making the case a bunch of different ways. And the Kevin O'Neill I know, you might not even be capable of this because you're such a straight arrow. The case to somebody, if somebody showed up and to Mrs. Kevin O'Neill, it's your son's teacher wants to go get a graduate degree because they believe that they'll be even better teacher for your kid. And by the way, a graduate degree costs this, and this person really needs to be making $120 a year. And why do you want to cheapskate out on the person who's above the first route about your neighbor, okay? The next schism, shall we say, is in families with kids versus families without kids. Now, I grew up in Evergreen Park, which is, you know, right next to, it's engulfed by Chicago, so you can say you lived in Chicago pretty much. You're surrounded by it. Now, Evergreen Park had people that had kids, right? they knew how to do that sort of thing. But never so many that they overwhelmed other people living in the neighborhood. So whenever you'd have a vote for Evergreen Park High School, we need, like, you know, the world's best track, they would vote no. You got a track, and it's pretty good. You know, or this. Then not that the people said no to everything, but by and large, it was a you prove it to me that you really need it kind of place. Now, you flip over to Orland, Rodriguez, whatever township that is, the people who have the kids run the day. They control the place. We need another bazillion dollars because the soccer team wants to go to, you know, Finland or someplace next year. And oh, by the way, we need a track that makes Notre Dame's look like kid stuff. They get to vote every single time. So it's not just, you know, the politicians versus, quote, the people. A lot of times it's the people versus the other people.
Sure, it's neighbor against neighbor.
Neighbor against neighbor. Now, my mother, we went to Catholic schools. She was not going to vote for anything for Evergreen Park High School that Marist didn't have. She goes, I'm paying for a school, and they don't have, you know, their own football field. Why the hell should Evergreen Park High School have one, you know? And to a certain extent, she's right. Other people would say, well, you know, because we want to be better than Marist or something. This is our community. I mean, it's not like it's just politicians versus, I mean, there's a lot of people that are going to Evergreen Park High School that will always vote yes. Because they know that the $1,000 they're paying more in taxes, there's 10 other people without any kids, they're matching you 10 for one.
Well, right? there's also people who understand that better schools in general are good for property values.
Correct.
And good for the community in general and so on. So whether I have kids there or not. Now, that might not translate to the track, but for other school initiatives, it will.
Well, if you get on... I used to bike a lot when I was, you know, down south. My stepdad was in Manteno. I'd always stop at the old plank trail, and I'd do 20 miles, and then I'd go see him. I needed to do something before I went to go see him, Kevin. You know, he was what a grumpy old dude he was. But you go by, there's a Catholic school along the way. And the first thing you do is you see...
I love how you always describe Walter that way. He was a good guy.
He was a good guy. But he was your basic Irishman that just came off the boat, you know, didn't like anybody. Anyway, but bananas of the day is long, generous. A lot of work for the church. Good guy. I mean, raised us. But so you first place you pedal along, there's this Catholic school.
What up with you? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That alone is sainthood here.
But all the rest of us. I mean, how many times we have 15 guys who are playing basketball and drinking at the place. Anyway, so you first place you pedal along is this Catholic high school. And it's pretty darn nice. They got way more stuff than Marist ever had. And then you come across this place. First time I'm pedaling along, Kevin, I go, what college is this? The thing is, it's huge. It's a massive, huge parking places. The fields, they made, when you and I went to Notre Dame, these practice facilities and stuff made Notre Dame's look like chicken feed. And I'm like, what is this place? So I call Audrey up and I go, what is it? She goes, that's like Lincoln Way Central or Lincoln Way West or something.
Yeah. I remember thinking the same about New Trier.
Yeah.
New Trier West, which isn't even open anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't believe this. Plant equipment in this place. Those people all voted for it, and that guy ended up going to jail, right? Because he embezzled it. He had his buddies build it or something. Didn't he end up going to jail? The guy was the commissioner out there, or
that's part of government as well.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it's not like there aren't these pressures. And a real quick story: I people know I like to go around the country once in a while. I haven't done it in ages. I bought this Ford Bronco, and I'm driving it back. So my buddy Howard, who used to call in once in a while, says, hey, make sure you go to, when you stop at the rest stop, get like a discount, get the, you know, the coupon book. Kevin, I've never dropped a coupon in a place in my life, right? So I get the coupon book, and all of a sudden there's this really nice Holiday Inn in Clarion, Pennsylvania, and it's like $70 off. I go, all right, well, I leave it in the car, I go in, and I sign up for a room, because I, you know, 12 hours is enough for me in the car, and I go, I'll have a room, and the guy goes, well, that'll be like, you know, $130. And I said, you know, I got a coupon, I think, and he goes, go get it. I walk in, he goes, all right, that'll be $60. You got to be kidding me. I mean, the difference, $130 to $60? But anyway, I you know, I'm not going anywhere. I don't know the place. So I go in the bar. The guy goes, oh, yeah, they got great burgers in there. So I go in there, and I start talking. This lady starts talking to me. She says, my brother's going to be here in a little bit. The brother is a city manager for, like, two places in Pennsylvania, and he's on the board of a bunch of... There's a lot of city managers in Pennsylvania, evidently. They're not big in Illinois. I don't know if you guys got them where you are, but... And the guy, I said, well, what's it like? And he says, it is so uneven, you would not believe it. He goes, I'm city manager at two places. One place has had a terrific board. He goes, their school system runs terrifically. The police are fine. The fire department's fine. They've made every pension contribution. Everything is done properly. They don't have, there's not a care in the world. He goes, the place next door, they've given people all these pensions they didn't deserve. The taxes are like 25% higher, and they're broke. He says, the difference in management is night and day. You drive by these towns, you think they're all the same. They're not. Some are broke, some are fine, with the same tax base. I mean, I would never
yes,
guess that.
And it's so easy for voters to be disengaged from it.
Yeah.
And so they do kind of run wild. And you are counting on the good intentions of the people involved. You know, they just get elected over and over again. In many cases, elected officials are in a career job in some of the small cities or small towns.
Well, Kevin, how do you shove this forward? We don't have that much time here, but how do we shove this forward to what the market's doing? Because now we have all the...
I don't know. Before we get away from teachers, I do have one other thing. I know in California, and I'm pretty sure in other jurisdictions as well, the second thing that they're asking is that the governor's order all schools closed,
yeah,
including private schools, because they don't want the private schools competing with them. And you know, they know that a lot of parents will say, well, I want my kid to go back to school, so forget the public school. I'll enroll in private school. Well, and they'll never see him again.
Yesterday, Kevin, I go over to the health club, right? They finally went to 75 minutes instead of 45. So I go, okay. Well, last week I tried to do the bike with the mask on, and I'm dying, right? I'm thinking, am I this body shape, or am I just dying with this mask? So yesterday, I'm the only person in there. And I go, I don't care. Lori, come get me. I pull the mask down, and I actually do pretty good on the bike after I've not done it in a while. So I was pretty happy with myself. Finally, some other guy walks in. So now there's two of us, this big, huge gym. And he remembers me from the OEX days. I think he's still in there. Or in one of the pits on the floor. And he's telling me, first he says, my family was down in February in Florida because my parents moved down there. Coming back, there's somebody hacking on the plane. Get off the plane, the whole family's sick for a couple of days. And the kids weren't. He said, my wife and I were. I was worse than her. You know, big time fever the whole bit. And I get over it. After a few days, I go back to work. And he goes, I know I had it in February. He goes, Florida, you know, I bet half the people on the plane had it. And he goes, now he goes, I don't get this. I get this thing from the school board. He goes, I'm working. You're working. He says, now they're going to do 2 days a week in class and the rest. He goes, no, what are I going to do? Stay home and watch the kid on the computer for 3 days? He goes, at the age of all these teachers, he goes, not one of them's going to die for it. And if one of them does, you know what? Could have been Hep C. He's at some point here, we got to tell these people to go back to work or we're not paying them. It's out of the blue. He goes, everybody else is working. He goes, I go to the food store, they're working. How do I get to be one of the ones that sits home and says no and get paid?
I think the right policies should be completely built around at-risk people.
Yeah.
If you are in an at-risk category, then yeah, stay home. Let's figure out a way to make you productive from home. But the rest of us have to get back to it.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially the people who've already had it. He goes. Why do I got to wear a mask? I already had it. I mean, I have no answer for him, Kevin.
Well, and you know, what's a mask do? It, on outbound, It prevents you from spreading. Well, how does that spread? It spreads by sneezing and coughing. Well, what if you're not sneezing and coughing? Then you're breathing. What is, you know, what is your mask doing? And inbound, if you're stopping droplets from getting to you, then you're accumulating them on your mask. Better not touch it.
Yeah. But I would say,
otherwise it's on your hands, and if you didn't wash your hands after touching it, you know, you, as Carl likes to say, you're creating a biohazard.
Well, I will say this, Kevin. I've softened on this a little bit, because when I go to the Myers on Sunday morning, inevitably I see two or three ladies walking around that are in their 80s. And if there's any chance on earth that I pick something up at the gas station across the street, I want them to be safe in there, even if it's somewhat unfounded. I'm willing to do it in the Myers. You know, I'll never be the guy who bitches at the girl at the front door and saying, make her life miserable by saying, I won't put a mask on. For those attempts, but I know there's people that are at risk in the same place as me, I honestly don't have a problem with it. I mean, for a little while.
I know. Also, I'll tell you, last time I was in Meijer, I've taken now to counting this because I'm so amused by the people who wear a mask, but it's below the nose.
Oh, yeah.
Which means you're not doing anything. And so I counted 14 my last trip into Meijer.
God. Well, the... SP Futures now up 21. NASDAQ Futures up 35. Again, big number is Disney. It's up 771. Kevin, thank you very much. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Matt Weber. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes calling in. SP Futures up 1850. NASDAQ Futures up 28. And
you'll like this tweet, Chief. Sven Henrik tweets, tough year for the consumers. First they lose their jobs, then the Fed makes the rich richer, then the banks shut off the credit spigot, and now the Fed wants to crank up inflation, making the cost of living even higher while devaluing the purchasing power of the dollar. Well done.
The only people not benefiting by this money coming in are the people that are still working. That is so scary.
That's not 100% true, but
95.
They're not as affected as the folks that aren't working.
My 401k is benefiting.
Yeah, well,
for a while.
The other side of it is the inflation thing will catch up with all of us. That's really what I was thinking.
There's no doubt about that.
Well, the. I'm going to say, after living through this as a Ute, by the time the wages even get part of it, it'll be years from now before anybody goes back to having COLA in their unions. That's when you're when the guy's making $11 an hour at, or $12 an hour at Jewel, and inflation's 30% over 2 years. When they get up to 15 just to break even, it's going to take a real long time, Russell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. Hey,
Here's
a couple of little missives here from Carl that are right up your alley. And I don't even know what to do with these numbers because I'm one of the few people, Carl Russell, that admits I'm out of my pay grade with what's going on here. I mean, I can't begin to put my arms around $3 trillion in a couple of months. I can't begin to put my arms around a 36% or 32% drop in GDP. I don't even know what that means. I mean, it's hard for me to... A third? I mean, what are we doing? And yet, if you look at, like, the spending numbers and the cash coming out, you know, you look at those numbers and people say, consumer must be happy. Well, the consumer's not happy. He's 40% out of work, for God's sake. Anyway, but here, what do you even do with this number? With 30 million people are currently collecting jobless benefits, government relief efforts now represent 7.1% of American personal income. It's far above the previous record of 1.55%, set in July of 1975. I had no idea what the hell was going on in July of 1975, except me going to grad school. According to data from the Bureau of Economic Analysis, what does that even tell you, Russell, as an economics professor? Are you there? Do we lose him?
Sorry. I muted because there was a giant plane taking off from O'Hare.
Oh.
And I didn't want to drown you out.
Well, you didn't want to. Did you hear what I was saying or no?
Oh, I heard everything that
okay.
you said.
Right, so,
and I remember reading that from Carl about how first off, in 75 we were experiencing stagflation from what
yes,
I remember. From
right.
I was very young at the time, but the world was kind of a nasty place, and the family that I lived in lost everything and had to downgrade our whole lives very quickly in the mid 70s. So I do recall that, but now if it's a short-term anomaly, which is what I think we all really hoped that it was going to be, and that by now we would be back to some sort of normalcy and the government wouldn't have to do anything else, I think it's something we could get through. Now I feel like the longer-term implications of this thing are going to be pretty nasty, and that starts to become worrisome. And, you know, the numbers are off the charts, but I think we continue to consider them to be somewhat temporary. You know, like during the Great Depression, I assumed that the impression was right off the bat, well, this is going to be temporary, everything will right itself, and we'll get back to work. And then that just seemed to be, it seemed to be less and less a possibility.
Well, I think part of that, and I sure hope we don't make the same friggin' stupid mistake we did back then. You do know, you out of the few people that are on the air, even on this show, you probably know that after the crash of 29, even though the economy started to head south pretty rapidly, even though some parts of the economy were already heading south in the 20s anyway, the agriculture and so forth. Mm-hmm. Sort of like now. There, I mean, part of the economy was in a depression long before the crash of 29. It would be, because up until like 2000, the single highest concentration of money in the top 10% versus the, you know, the bottom 90 was in 1929, like the day before the crash.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever that happens, I always worry that it's, even though it's not good socially, it's also not good economically, because that's what happened then. Mm-hmm. But anyway, where I'm sort of heading with this is that the idea is that the market came back from the crash of 29 and almost made it back to break even by like 31 or 31 and a half, if that's a term. And I think it put a lot of people in the idea that the market knows everything, we're going to come right back from this. Same thing as now. I mean,
what you said sounds like exactly like a lot of things that a lot of people that are saying. Well,
yeah,
it must be okay because the financial markets are hanging in there, and the financial markets are full. Supposedly, they're always right in the long run, but now you're going to make me get out my old numbers and start extrapolating what happened then with what's happening right now.
That's what I got you for.
I know, but the rebound, the stock market did rebound an awful lot, and then it really took a turn for the big time worse. Even though people were already in, you know, red lines and all that sort
right.
of thing. Hopefully, my hope is that the government does a better job of trying to manage the thing. But have you seen the new Tom Hanks thing, Grey Wolf? It's really cool.
No, I haven't.
Where he's and I'm going somewhere with this, I swear. Where he's supposed to, it's like the first time that he's leading a destroyer across the Atlantic when they can get no air support to try and take out as many German subs as possible. They reach, I don't know, about the 2/3 point of where they need to get to, and he's basically spent all of his depth charges and everything else. He's barely got anything else that he can use to defend all the other boats, basically.
Ramming speed.
I think he was new and he shot all of his bullets, and that might be what the Fed's doing.
I honestly believe if we could pin some of them in a room here, mm-hmm. apply them with alcohol, maybe we'd have to. I think they thought if they found a way to tide us over for 45 days, maybe 75 days, and it would be a number we could handle. We'd come out of it and we'd be okay. And now they're here, and we haven't really done squat back. And I think mm-hmm. I think they probably figured they got another 60. I really don't think that Jerome Powell is planning on having a $30 trillion balance sheet, do you?
No, I don't think they foresaw. Hell, you think this time last year we would have foreseen what we have right now?
Well, so when do
under
you...
Under any circumstances, even if he got directly asked the question, what if we have a pandemic that shuts down the economy, which, yeah, really, 12 months ago, I think we would have all kind of laughed at. But, you know, do you think you would have thought that we're going to be, that the balance sheet's going to be where it is right now, ever, under any circumstances?
Well, I mean, I guess one of the key questions that I have trouble with this time, when I read the other stuff, I've read it so much lately that I almost feels like I was there, but why is it that in late 60s, early 70s, that when the Fed started putting money into the system, and they never went above like 12.5% a year, which is a lot. So they cooked up this batch of inflation, which were all, you know, that have been around from that long, know full well what it was. Other people have read about it. They cooked up this batch of inflation, and there was no turning back from it. But the market went up originally, and these numbers are so low that they don't, I mean, they went up from like 800 to 1,000, which was a lot, and then cut back down to like 800 years later. I mean, it made it 1,000. I think it got to 1,000 or real close in like 1968.
And then it took forever.
It was 1983 or someplace?
Yeah.
Before it went through it again. It's 15 years. And what I'm saying is the Fed was not able to grab Let's put this, how can I do this economically where you won't give me a C paper? The Fed was not able to grab, or I think they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't think there was inflation. But they were not able to grab the long end of the curve. In other words, they poured money in, which lowered the near-term interest rates somewhat. Not like the zero like we are now. But they, people said, the people who had the money said, hey, I'm not giving it to Manny Weber for a year with 10% inflation and getting back 1%. I'm not that stupid. I want my 10% plus the 2% interest I want to get anyway. So those, so the long-term rates went up very rapidly because of anticipation of inflation. So the stock market went down because why would you buy a stock? You know, the economy's not doing so hot. Why would you buy IBM paying 2% when you're getting 10%? By the way, IBM hasn't gone up in 8 years. When I can go to Continental Bank and get 12 or 14. So the market never got caught up in the inflation at all. Not many asset prices really did because you had your housing couldn't go up because the mortgage was 12%, right? So we never had the asset bubble type of thing. Yet you look at other times this has happened in society. I mean, you look at Iran recently, Venezuela recently, and you look at the Weimar Republic. The money poured into the system, and before the interest rates had a chance to react, and maybe they did, the stock market took off faster than the money supply. Where in Weimar Republic, the money supply went up by 100 times, so did the stock market. So it seems like now we're on that different model. Is it because the Fed now is so overwhelming that they're even buying the long term, the long end of the stuff? They're even saying, even though there's inflation there, we're willing to buy, you know, the long bond back at 1% or 2% or something. I mean, are they so overwhelming the number, they're overwhelming all the markets, that the inflation anticipation can't even get in there? I mean, obviously in Europe.
Oh, I think they're totally doing that. Because what are their alternatives to buy when they're putting money to work? You know, they start to have to spread it out over more and more financial instruments. And that's totally artificially keeping rates down.
Well, you and I would never put your dad's money in a negative or even an even 10-year bond in Germany. Unless we thought somebody was dumb enough to come buy it from us at a higher price, and that would be the European Central Bank. I mean,
there's no reason whatsoever to. I mean, if you're not using fixed income to cover your bills anymore.
Well, but you can
it's just not. I mean, that was all. You know, that goes to the CFA thing where, XYZ wants to retire at 70. They're going to need $2,000 a month to cover their living expenses. Well, the first thing you do is you find a decent bond fund or a decent group of bonds, and that's going to help them cover their living expenses. And then you buy some stocks and you get growth to offset the inflation thing. That's not even a fixed income alternative. I met yesterday with somebody from one of the big banks. One of the things we've been talking about is, what can they do to get income for their for the people that need it, you know, for the retirees that it expected to be able to live off of, some sort of revenue stream from their retirement account, when, and most of the time they were saving, they assumed they could use bonds to do that. You know, now they're coming up with option strategies where they take in income from the options.
Oh god.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that I'm totally pivoting here, but I think that's one of the reasons that individual stock option activity has actually increased at a faster rate in the past few years than options on indexes.
Well, you also,
people are using them that way.
Yeah, except you can't. I've been in this.
They're selling calls against the stock.
I understand that, but I'm saying is you can't really look at those numbers because when I started in '80. You had an expiration every 3 months. You know, now you've got one every week. So it's kind of hard to
put. And you've got them every week in the end. I mean, those match up with the indexes versus the individual stocks.
But, I mean, we sell calls for people. You know that. We sell more than we ever did because we'll sell them out a week or two. We sell them out a month or two.
Right.
Right, so, I mean,
You're able to do more. No, it's as a percentage of the overall volume growth.
Right.
And personally, I think part, when I ask the question, I don't get many answers around it, but one of the better answers I've heard is, well, individuals who own a handful of stocks are looking at, they need some income, they don't want to sell their stocks, they do something with options to take in some income.
Except you're not. A lot of this went out there. This is pretty technical. Russell knows what I'm talking about. I don't know if anybody else. The calls that you sell now are incredibly cheaper than they were 5 or 6 years ago, because one of the biggest components of a call option is the interest rate.
Yep.
So when you see a call now, it's pretty much all volatility. It has nothing to do with the interest rate. Should I go through this real quickly? I probably will. If you have a, let's say it's 1984 and the interest rates are 10%. Mm-hmm. You want to buy IBM at, say it was 200 at the time, was before it split, 6-for-1 or 5, whatever. So you're trying to buy IBM at 200, so at, versus a 190 call. All right, now the first thing is that the interest on the strike, the difference between the 190 and zero, if you bought IBM, you'd have to pay interest on that, correct? You buy the option, you don't. So the option is never going to be $10. It's going to be $10 plus interest on the 190. Just to start out. That's before it. That's if there's no volatility, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, but now there's no interest. So that might have been, if it's a 9-month option, that might have been what, $4?
Oh yeah, it could have been a significant portion of the. It could have. And what you mean by $4 is if you took the interest in the inputs into the formula, from 10% to 0%, the option would change in price by $4 right off.
Well, it's the interest on 190 bucks.
That would be the difference.
It's 100 interest on 190 bucks at 10% for 9 months, for 3/4 of a year. So it's really 19 bucks for 3/4, so it's like 14. So that option is going to be $14 over parity just because of the interest component. Right?
Yep.
And then you got to add volatility on top of that. So if you bought an option, if you sold an option, you essentially are selling somebody else the ability to not own the stock. So you were getting interest back on your stock just by selling an option. Correct?
Exactly. Yeah.
But it was
a big number.
Yeah. Well, now in this day and age, it's nothing. It's not even part of the formula, damn near. Now it's all volatility. What are the chances of the thing going to, 250 or something? Right, but they've been volatile.
Right. No, volatility is a little bit higher right now than it has been.
Oh, yeah.
But it's, you're not getting as much dollar wise out of the option, but you're getting something, and you're getting something that's a little bit better than, because of the volatility component. You're getting something that's a little bit better than buying some sort of fixed income instrument.
Well, when you're teaching your creature's sitting there bringing, how many apples do you get a day?
I mean, oh God, I get hardly anything.
Virtual apples?
So.
Yeah. I get no virtual apples. I get, can you write me a letter of recommendation? A lot.
You don't get any virtual fingers or anything, do you?
I'll start charging for that.
I was going to say, what's your invoice on that?
Yeah. Hey, speaking of invoices, did you see Carl's outrage about the masks at his local store? We had to tweet that one out. That he's in Tennessee now. He said, well, the mayor or somebody, I think it was the mayor, comes up with some really, in Carl's idea, a stupid, we all got to wear a mask no matter what we do law. So, he goes to Kroger's that afternoon and he sees a big display, 3 masks, $15, but they're the masks, they're not medical masks, they're the ones for like, dust if you're like, if you're like grinding your concrete or something. Because they're useless. In the carpenter aisle, they're 50 cents. So they stuff 3 of them in a box and they're charging 15, telling you they're on sale.
Isn't that nice?
Isn't that special? Anyway, so I guess if you look at it, if you teach your guys, a capital asset pricing model, don't ever turn off the radio, is pretty simple. It basically says that if you're looking for a 10% return, and somebody says that a building gives you $100,000 a year every year profit, blah 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 after costs and everything, you're going to say, I'll give you $1 million for the place, right? I mean, it's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And if it and if it's 5%, you're going to give the guy $2 million. But where do these formulas, Russell? I mean, when you're a math guy, when does the math at the extreme start to get crazy? Sort of like you need to drink when you're running a marathon, but if you drink 4 gallons,
if you drink
you die.
Too much,
you
die. It's not going to go well for you.
No. So how do you, what is there an extreme on this end? I mean, I'd be the first person to say that if interest rates drop from 10 to 8, I'm willing to pay more for a piece of property, right? But if they drop to, like, zero, I'm not willing to pay infinite. Because then all of a sudden, what if they go back up? Who the hell am I going to sell it to, type of thing? How does that, when does that start to happen? I mean, when does the Fed or anybody, not just them, lose track of something at the edge? I mean, eggs are good for you. I don't think you want to eat a dozen a day. I mean, when does that start to happen in finance, where you just say the model's no good here at the edge? It's like your option model is no good at 2:30 of expiration day. There's just not enough time for the model to work. At that point, you're either going to be in the money or you're not. I mean, something's going to happen or not. It becomes almost a binary thing. When you're teaching this math, how do you teach these models and formulas when interest rates are like nothing?
I lie to them and say we have to throw an interest rate in there. And of course, one smart kid always raises his hand, and usually one of the athletes raises his hand and goes, "But that's not where interest rates are right now." Yes, I know that, but if I put the, and then I've actually got an option pricing model in Excel, and I said, "Well, if I make it zero, here's what happens." And so therefore you don't even think anything about, so I've got to show how it reacts by fudging the number a little bit. So that's what I do. I have to say, and then I also say, look, when I was growing up, I always use this automobile example where I could see how much cars went up in cost from year to year back in the 70s. I was fascinated by that as a kid. And that you will see that again at some point in your lifetime.
Well, but if you look
and at that point I've lost them all anyway. But that's really what I try to do.
But Apple, I mean, I look at it here and I see the thing, or I see the PE of the S&P going to 23.5 when it's normally what, 16 or 17? And the stuff looks, but if I'm going to say to myself, the Fed is going to maintain control of this like forever. I'm never going to be able to get anything at a bank ever. And here's a company that's trading $500 and it's paying me $20, which normally I wouldn't touch, right? Or $10.
Yeah.
By the model, if they're going to be able to do this forever, it's not a bad buy, Russell. I mean, and yet we know that one of these days they're going to be on their skis and they're going to say, "Oh my God, we got some inflation someplace and we're going to have to cut back on this," and all of a sudden Apple or XYZ or whatever it is, now the $500 becomes a dream in the designer's eye, when this thing's trading like $250 or something. But but right now, if you were a guy, Maddie Weber's age, even though he's aging on us right in front of us, and he's been on the show now, we're pushing 10 years. He's heard me
past
say this.
10 years.
Yeah, he's been listening to me say this, and like anybody else, he's going to say, "Chief, why hasn't it happened?" And, basically, you've been talking about this cliff on the Oregon Trail between, Missouri and Oregon, and we've been on this road for about 6 months now. I don't see no freaking cliff. What's the matter with you? I mean, when does it occur, or does it not occur? It's bizarre. I mean, maybe, why would anybody like him believe anything I say, basically?
No, I can understand that, because it's almost like we've been crying wolf forever, those of us that have been around for a while and have seen, what can happen to the downside. And then when we do get, some sort of hiccup, we rebound very, very quickly.
By the same policy. We decide, we pour more debt on it, and we more debt is more. It's like giving a cut on your leg and having, 16 Band-Aids pile up on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I think we're getting close. Of course, I've said this 100 times. The reason why I say that, Russell and Maddie, is that it seems like the Fed has to do more and more to stay in the same place.
Well, I think this thing that's going on with gold is the early sign that we've got some real problems coming.
And how come I'm not?
I think
So why did you let me sell?
I really do think that's the indicator that's the one that has me worrying a little bit, that I think we're going to look back on and everybody's going to be like, why did gold do that? Well, because some smart people started really anticipating inflation and put their money where their mouth was and bought gold and some other assets like that.
Why do you think it took so long? I used to get rumors. Guys would send me notes here from various mm-hmm. parts of the world, and they thought there was a big liquidator of gold. That's what kept. I would have thought it would have started to move. It's really started to move what, 4 or 5 weeks ago, maybe mm-hmm. maybe 8 weeks ago. I really thought it should have started to move the first of the year, and it didn't. I mean, was there a liquidator somewhere in India or China or somebody?
Do they think it was China? Because China's got some real problems as far as their economy goes, and basically the Chinese government is, you know, all the public companies in China, and if they're having a liquidity crisis, they're going to start selling stuff.
You know what I've not heard a smidge about is that we talked about it really almost 3-4 weeks in a row when you were on a while back. And it's amazing what you don't read in the papers now or these pages. It's like all these problems that were in the world. What is going on with Hong Kong? What's going on with Ukraine? I mean if you don't mm-hmm. dig, you can't find this stuff. But what is the status? We talked, Russell, a year ago, that how people in China were starting to, the dollar-denominated debt was becoming non-performing. And there's like $1 trillion of that out there. Is that all of a sudden become performing, or is it something we don't want to talk about? I can't find it anywhere.
No, it's not that it's become performing, that's for sure. It's probably just consistently bad. Like it hadn't gotten worse, but I think there's a reluctance to report on it. First off, you don't ever want to say anything negative about China. We've dealt with that in a roundabout way on this program. You did more than I did, but if you say something negative about China, they remember it, and you know they've expelled some of our reporters and. You know, maybe that's part of it right there. They kicked out a bunch of the business reporters. Maybe there's no ability to report on it right now.
Well, just for quick review, the Chinese government at one point, was this 10, 15 years ago, they had so much debt over there that they said, we're not facilitating this anymore, for lack of a better mm-hmm. term. So they said, you guys got to borrow directly. So normally when you lend to somebody in China, you have to convert your dollars into yuan, and then the loan is made in yuan, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what they said, no, go straight out. If you want to, if Matt Weber wants to loan you, you know, $40 million for your new factory, you just borrow that from him in dollars. And by the way, it doesn't come through our system. We don't know or care whether you have it or not. And oh, by the way, if Matt tries to come sniveling to the Chinese government, we'll say, he went to you direct. Mm-hmm. What are you asking me for? Basically, I think that's the story. S&P futures up 1650. NASDAQ only up 1475. Now, big mover still Disney, up 750. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments,
You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen, Mr. Matt Weber. Mr. Russell, Professor Russell Rhodes with us as well. S&P futures up 17, NASDAQ futures only up 11. Dow futures, we have them up 177, and I'm going to say 50, some of that is Disney up 767. And we've got CVX, Chevron up 171. We got oil prices up today, which I'll talk about in a second. We got gold to the moon. So we got all kinds of stuff going on this morning. They're, I guess, inflationary if you want to go down that road. Nikkei down 58.2%, Shanghai up 5, call that flat. Hang Seng up 155.6, so very quiet over in Asia. Europe not so much. Well, actually, the DAX was up 1% a minute ago. No, it's not. 52.4%. FTSE's up almost 1%, 58 points, that's 0.97%. CAC around up 73.7, so to the upside over there. Bonds, 0.54. Still, 10-year yield is low. One minus 0.51. Japan hanging in there at positive 0.007. We've got oil to the moon, you know, also this morning. Well, the dollar 29 at 3%, 42.99. Rent up 129, 45.72. Natural gas up another 4 cents, 223. I tell you, I should have bought two or three of the oil companies that are mostly natural gas related, maybe 10 weeks ago, and my clients and me would have been happy. We're happy now. Always be happier, Manny, right? Arbob up 3 cents, 125. Gold up $32 now, 2053. So 1.58%. Silver up 26.97. That's up 94 cents, 226.97. This thing couldn't get through $18 for the 3 years I've owned it. Now it's, we're talking about a distant memory, $18. Copper up a penny, 291. Matty, we have for us traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still doing well on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues whatsoever on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower's been looking good for the most part. Stevenson, a bit of a slowdown around Cicero, but no accidents or issues to report. Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford, all quiet, as is Lakeshore Drive in both directions. In the suburbs, there are some issues off the expressways. Out in Carroll Stream, Armichael Road at Schmale Road, there is a crash. And then just east of there, Route 83 at Foster Avenue in the western burbs, there's an accident. And then still dealing with that water main issue in the northern suburbs at Half Day Road on the westbound side at Summit Avenue. Westbound traffic is being shifted into the center lane due to a broken water main that happened earlier this morning. In the city, we have Lawndale Avenue between 16th and Roosevelt closed due to police activity. An officer was shot in the thigh.
He is in stable condition, but an investigation is continuing. This happened at 3:40 this morning and continues, the investigation does throughout the morning, that has Lawndale Avenue closed between 16th and Roosevelt. Weather today, lots of sunshine, beautiful day here in Chicago, a high of 77. Right now it's crystal clear and 60 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 111 today. Right now it's clear and 91. In sports, White Sox won their sixth straight. They beat the Brewers 3-2 last night. They'll return home for two more with the Brewers down on the south side. Cubs have won five in a row. They swept the Royals, winning 5-4 last night. They'll now head to Kansas City for two with the Royals down there. The Yahoo Sports is reporting that the Cardinals are expected to play beginning on Friday against the Cubs in St. Louis. So it looks like the Cardinals will travel back from Milwaukee and then be ready to go on Friday to resume their season. They'll have to play 55 games in the next 52 days, Chief, which will be interesting for the Cardinals.
Only 7 innings, though.
A lot of 7-inning doubleheaders. Yeah. Diamondbacks lost to the Astros 8-2. And lastly, Blackhawks are looking to get back on top. They're tied at one game apiece in their best-of-five series with Edmonton. They'll play Game 3 tonight, 9:30 p.m. Central Time. Chief.
You're a big fan of Harold Ramis, right?
I am, yeah.
Now, do you think...
I think Ghostbusters is one of the greatest movies of all time.
Well, he did Caddyshack, too, right?
He did.
Now, do you think that he's a Chicago area lad, or was, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And still has, like, his theater school here, and was involved with Second City and all that stuff when he was alive.
Now, do you think Schmale Road, he must have lived near there, and that became Judge Schmale's?
Now, that's interesting. I don't know. That's
It's funny you say that. Whenever I head northwest on the expressway and you see Peterson Road, on Ferris Bueller, Ferris Bueller keeps using the last name Peterson for stuff.
Yeah.
This is Officer Peterson. Can I help you? And, you know, I always wonder if that's where that one came from. But wouldn't be the least bit surprised.
I bet there's a...
You drop that in there.
Oh, by the way, we missed, I'll dig him up here. One of my favorite actors died the other day, Wilford Brimley. And I've got a few quotes from him here that I'll try and dig up if I can find them. He was... I liked him in The Natural. I loved him in Absence of Malice. I don't know if you remember that movie? Where the...
I have not seen that movie.
It was Paul Newman and Sally Field. It was Sally Field, right? But it was one you would never come across seeing today, Maddie.
People my age remember Wilford Brimley for the diabetes infomercials that he would do all the time.
Well, it was
I got the diabetes and I'm grumpy.
Yeah.
I can fix it.
But he was it had to do with Paul Newman was the son of a historic mafia figure in Florida, a guy that retired to Florida, and Paul Newman was not in the rackets. So Sally Field was going to make her day, proving that he was, because the district attorney was trying to make his day, proving that he was as well. So there was this constant back and forth where everybody was trying to outfox the other person, with Sally Field involved, trying to get involved with Paul Newman and a whole bit. And, so Wilford Brimley came down as the big honcho from Washington. He came down, he was the guy that we look to have today, and we don't have. You know, you go up the chain far enough, and you finally find an intelligent, honest man that comes down and straightens the thing up. And the attorney general is this guy named James, Elliot Rosen. So James Wells was Wilford Brimley. He says, "What'd you figure you'd do after government service, Elliot?" And Elliot goes, "I'm not quitting." And he goes, "You ain't no presidential appointee, Elliot. I'm the one that hired you. It's me. You got 30 days." But the one in The Natural was I like this one, Pop Fisher. "My mom urged me to get out of this game. When I was a kid, she pleaded with me, and I meant to. You know what I mean? But she died." And Red says, "Tough. Now look at me. I'm wet nurse to a last place, dead to the neck up ball club, and I'm choking to death." What a great wet nurse to a dead from the neck up ball club. Boy, there's been some softball teams I could have used that on, Manny. What do you think?
That's your pep talk when things are going bad?
You guys, what are you like? I'm a wet nurse to a last place, dead to the neck up ball club. Which of course the Knights were until Roy Hobbs showed up. But, So anyway, R.I.P. Wilford Brimley. Those are pretty, some pretty good movies. I guess his big, did he win an Oscar for Cocoon? Or he was nominated for one? I never watched that. I don't really ever seen that, saw that one, but it was a big, that was a big flick at the time. Anywho, back to the economy here, Russell. What?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're seeing reasons why the market's doing this, and we're seeing reasons why, you know, Amazon's doing what it's doing. But hell, you're putting all their competitors out of business, for God's sake. I mean, this is,
and they're hiring a bunch of people.
Yeah,
and I found that interesting. There are two or three companies that are gonna have, that are going on massive hiring sprees.
Home Depot, Menards, you name them.
And
Home
beyond
Depot,
that, yeah. You know, did you know, this is something that I learned, you know, I was in the backyard and I had to mute because we're in a proximity when they take off in a certain direction, all the planes come over my house. I've actually got an app where I can tell you what plane is going over my house and where they're going. You know, Amazon has their own airline now. They they're circumventing FedEx and they do their own shipping stuff around on their own planes.
They're taking
over the world. They're taking over the world.
That's interesting. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah. No, I didn't know. I was really, they've got a, I don't know, they have like, I don't know, 8 or 10 hubs around the U.S. that they, you know, I guess they just figured instead of paying FedEx, we'll just, you know, keep the money and pay ourselves to ship certain things. And probably the ones that cost FedEx and UPS more to deliver, that aren't as, you know, that are a little bit more out of the way, those are the things that they're using FedEx and UPS for. They don't have just their vans, they've got their own distribution network too. And they plan on hiring well over 100,000 people to keep things going.
I wonder about that. Well, with the economy right now, I like the fact that people get hired. But I don't like this class warfare that's going on right now. Well, not so much warfare, but you hear people on CNBC, not my buddies John and Pete necessarily, but stuff people say, Russell, you wonder if they went back and played it, they'd be sorry they said it. There'd be stuff like, they talk about the unemployment right now, people being laid off in, you know, hospitality industries, you know, convention industries, those kinds of things. And we've known people in those industries. I mean, I know people who used to be in there. And these are real paying jobs. I mean, to people who do the, you know, the machinery show at McCormick Place. I mean, these are not. But the idea where somebody say, "Well, there's jobs all over. Home Depot's hiring." All right, why exactly does that person who's got probably a master's in marketing or something that's making $100,000 a year and worth every penny of it? You're gonna dispatch them to go grab a job for $10, and all of a sudden you're gonna be okay. I mean,
that's not that is self defeating on a lot of levels.
But we've gotten
you
this.
Know, you go from
the
from,
people who are. Yep. Let's just say I get this, and some people are working pretty darn hard from home. I know Maddie is, but Maddie, you're in an unusual spot in that firm. You have your clients, and you're on the road to see those guys anyway. I mean, you don't really have to be in your, quote, office that much to service your high-end clients. So
that's right.
I'm going to say you're somewhat of an outlier. But the idea of all these other creatures hanging from home getting paid, you know, and feel they're entitled to it, and just somehow the other people are supposed to go to work and they don't care if they get sick and work for them. To me, this is getting heavier by the day, Russell. It's not getting better.
Yeah.
It's getting worse.
This thing is lasting longer than any of us expected. I think we're all very aware of that. And, unfortunately, I think I've reached a point where I think the solution behind getting this thing behind us is shutting down again for like 3 months, but really being hardcore about it. You know, I was half joking a few weeks ago where I said that we probably need a more authoritarian government to tell us what to do because people aren't doing what they should have done as far as, you know, not going to a giant house party and spreading this thing. Unfortunately, I was half joking, but I think you thought I was 100% joking. I almost feel like if we're really going to get this behind us, the government's going to have to step up and make us behave because people aren't behaving on their own.
I don't think this was ever containable. And fortunately for us, it's nowhere near as deadly as we thought it originally was. And I think you just got to let it play out. It's like the common cold, maybe more contagious.
Personally, I would like to do that. I really would. But, you know, or let people have their own choice around it. But you can't go. We're going halfway. We're either letting everybody have their choice around it, or, you know, we're saying that if you visit Kentucky, you can't go back to New York without self-quarantining yourself for 14 days.
But the New York...
Go one way or the other.
But New York...
I would be totally fine with opening everything up and giving people an alternative to not going out if they choose not to, and seeing where the chips fall.
Well, you need to protect the people that are most dangerous. You need to make sure...
Yeah.
You need to make sure that your hospitals are not overwhelmed, which they're not. And the idea that New York is way down in infections because Cuomo did the right thing is such BS. I can't.
Oh, it ran its course there.
Yeah, it ran its course there. And so we've got a country that's so freaking big. How do we not think? Because I don't see how this thing, to me, this is not SARS, which is way less contagious. And oh, by the way, every single person who got SARS, within 20 minutes after you got it, you found your fanny your way to the doctor or the hospital because it was that bad.
It knocked you on your butt.
Right.
Yeah.
So this didn't. But I mean, I was talking to a guy yesterday. Well, and he's convinced his family had it in February. I got some stuff in my coronavirus website now that everybody sends me. Some mid-30-ish lady researcher went back and looked at, I've said this before, at nothing but doctor's reports from January till March, actually December till March, and with unidentified flus when the other flu had already left, the one that started the winter, she's absolutely convinced 6 or 7 million people had it between, say, December 15th and March 15th. So,
and were asymptomatic?
No. Well, no. A lot of people were just sick. They went to the doctor, and the doctor didn't know what it was. That's where she got all the data from. Doctor visits. Unknown virus, unknown virus, unknown virus. So, I mean, it wasn't...
And they were sick and they got better.
Yeah, they were sick and they got better.
Yeah. So,
you know, which is...
Yeah, it's so difficult to figure out what the right thing would have been.
I think what happens
it'd be great to say let the thing completely run its course.
I think that if there's a chance,
and see how it turned out.
Well, Russell, if we had it to do all over again, okay, from day one, and if there was some communication, and I'm sure as hell not going to pin this all on the president because I don't think it belongs there. If this thing happened in China, and if we had business people here who had some sort of morals anywhere. I think that the 400,000 people or whatever that went back and forth from the U.S. to China after, like, November or October when it started over there, or even September, some people say, once that happened, I mean, we got it on both coasts. You know, we stopped the planes to China.
Yep.
The stuff on the East Coast is coming from Europe. I think the businessmen in Milan, the new people that were sick in Wuhan over there and still sent their people over there, I hope there's a ring in hell for them. I really do. Because I think our businessmen here knew all about it and still sent their own employees there. If there was a chance of us stopping this or anybody, China should have been more forthright. The WHO needed to warn us sooner, and we had to cut off the spigot. And when you got here, if anybody had it, you traced them down. We had a chance for maybe 2 weeks to do that, I'm going to say, at Thanksgiving. And once we pass that, And we're talking, if 7 million people have it in January, how do you shut something down in March to stop it? I mean, it ain't happening.
It's already a little too late.
It's too late. And I mean, look what happened in New York and Chicago. They took people from work that had it and shoved them home. Look at the best thing I got. Well, not the best. One of the best things I got from a listener in a long time, Russell. I don't think you were around when I was telling you about this. Somebody sends me the meat packing plant in Greeley, Colorado, that had the big hot spot. Now you know anything about them because basically everybody worked its way through, and a lot of people were sick. Well, if you showed up for work, it was an eight or ten thing questionnaire. Did you drive to work with anybody who was coughing or says they were sick? No. Or anybody at home that's coughing or says they're sick or has a fever? No. If you answered yes to any of the questions, Do not take a test. Just go home. Okay.
No. I mean, did you just, you know,
so
I don't think they took that route. I don't think they thought to take that route.
No, that's what they did. I mean, this is the, yeah. somebody's a worker there, or somebody's mm-hmm. kid was a worker there. Said, "Chief, you got to see this and send it to me." And they had the name of the company in it. But they basically said, "If you have it, go home. Come back in 2 weeks." So it worked. It worked its way through the community. Half these people are Hispanic. They didn't care about them, right? And it worked its way through the community. And guess what? Now there's not a problem in Greeley, Colorado, because everybody already had it.
What do they call that? Not mass immunity, but
herd immunity. Herd immunity.
Yeah, herd immunity. I couldn't think of that word.
And I don't know. I don't know if people were ever refused. I think the Hispanic neighborhoods in Chicago, same thing happened. I know, as you know, I know like a lot of people
got it.
And yeah, they stayed home and they just had it.
Yeah. Well, no, I think I'm certain there are a lot more people that had it than you know show up in the official numbers. For sure, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if I had it. I was in London in late February when it was already starting to spread around, and then I was exposed to a ton of students that went all over the United States for spring break for a week. So it's very possible that I got exposed to it at some point.
I'm gonna say you have a 99% chance of being exposed to it, and I'll bet I'm 95. Yep. Somehow or other, you or I either had it or we have some kind of T-cell immunity, which people do have, which means I know an awful lot of people who had like a really awful cold in November, December. That might be the thing that is keeping those people. The cold might be similar to it, but something anyway, but I guess somewhere along the line here, Russell, I mean, I was having this conversation with somebody at the club last week. I said, look, nobody wants to go to work. I mean, I happen to love my job. I think you love teaching, but that's somewhat rare. And if I was a high scaler building Hoover Dam out in the heat with boulders coming by my head every second, I'm not so sure that I really want to get up and go to work. So if you'd
rather sit home in the AC with a six pack and watch Judge Judy?
And get a check? Yeah.
And get a check. Yeah, that was the last part of that one. Yeah.
So somewhere along the line here.
I can understand that. My only sister is like that. She was kind of happy to have the short break that she had and get some checks and then also have her brother pay her mortgage. But, I can understand that as well. I think there are a lot of people that, since they didn't get a regular summer vacation, they get a smaller summer vacation, a staycation on the government.
Well, and
I actually believe that, regardless of how bad your job is, it does reach a point where you start to really kind of want to go back to work.
I agree.
I think there's a certain personal satisfaction in going out working and getting a check for it.
Russell, in our day, that was driven into us from the time we were 5 years old. If you're hanging around on a Saturday doing nothing, why aren't you cutting a guy down on the neighbor's lawn because he's 80 years old? And by the way, make yourself $5. I mean, that's in our DNA, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure it's in the entitled world now's DNA. I mean, look at some of these teachers. Until there's a 100% chance that I'm not going to get it, then you say, "I don't care about me; it's for the children." BS. I mean, at some point you're going to say, "You can stay home as long as you want, but if you're not teaching, you're not getting paid." And that day has to come. I mean, somewhere, because I don't care if it's 20 people, somebody is going to stay home. I mean, when the school nurse gets to stay home and get paid, what is she doing home? Is she showing people how to use a thermometer scanner on her forehead from home? And she should still, I mean, what's she doing?
I mean, they're not doing a whole lot.
Yeah, so I mean, the guy in the club last night, his kid's going to be going to school 2 days a week. So who's supposed to take care of the other three? He goes, "I'm supposed to stay home from work when
we keep talking about this around the Rhodes household, and we think that they'll probably get to school, and a lot of schools will end up going back to virtual, you know, by mid to late September. And when that happens, you know, if you've got two parents that are supposed to go to a job, what happens there? You know, because a two income household, they depend on, you know, the public school. I hate to say it this way, but to provide a form of daycare for them 9 months out of the year.
All right. Well, how's another way? How harsh does this sound? if you're working from home because you refuse to go to work, especially if you have a public job, no Amazon for you. The store you go to can have no toilet paper. No, who do they think is doing all this other stuff, Russell? Somebody's working.
Where's it coming from? Yeah.
Anyway, you have a thing on the market? Do you have a thing on the Fed? Paul's talking about inflation.
I really thought we were going to start rolling over this week in the stock market. I thought we were going to get those really positive earnings behind us. And I even personally got short for the first time in a long time.
It's only Wednesday, bud.
Late Monday. So I'm a little surprised at how we're acting here.
I'm not surprised that you or I are a little early.
I'm always early. I'm usually 6 months early, but I wrote on the calendar 6 months ago that I need to start getting short.
By the way, regarding this week, it's only Wednesday. You got three days to be right here, bud.
I know.
If you missed it by a day, it'll be the best you ever did.
I'm missing it by a couple of days, but usually the market changes direction while we're doing the show. Did it change direction for me?
I might. If I get long, I'll do it for you. Take care, buddy.
All right, I appreciate that.
S&P futures up 16. The NASDAQ futures only up 2. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.